Hello and welcome to the Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host for the show, Robin Daly, and I'm also the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that for 15 years has been supporting people with cancer in understanding and utilising integrative medicine to help their recovery. One of the delights of our connected world is the ease with which I'm able to step out of the confines of Britain to find out what's going on in other parts of the world. Emily Garfield is based in California and is working with people with cancer in very creative ways, using her own life experience as the foundation of her programs. I'm talking to Emily over the internet at her home in California. Brilliant to be able to talk to you today all the way over there in California, and thanks for making a very early start today to account for the time difference.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Okay, so you describe yourself as a certified wellness and mindset coach, as well as a Pilates and yoga teacher. So although these two things are clearly closely intertwined, many people would see issues of mindset and psychology as a separate discipline to exercise, but you cover both. Do you see them as separate approaches, or do you see them as different aspects of a unified form of support?
I see them as different approaches, like as a unified support, because I really believe that you can't have one without the other. A big part of recovering from cancer in the beginning is physical, but you know, you really, the mindset is really, really holds us back about, you know, wanting to give up and saying we can't do things and believing that we can't do things. So if we can learn to train the brain along with the body, they need each other. It's a better approach, I believe.
Right. Yeah. I can see the synergy for sure. So, like so many others who are doing incredible work in the sphere of wellness and recovery for people with cancer, you have your own personal experience of cancer, and you found a way for the experience of cancer to completely turn your life around, in fact. So I'd love to hear your personal story first and about the steps that led to the life that you now lead.
Great. So prior to cancer, I'll kind of try to sum it up in a quick story. I was married. I had three kids. I had, my dream was to have three kids. I had actually had cancer as a young little girl when I was 4 years old. I had a rare cancer called rhabdomyosarcoma sarcoma. And I had radiation to my pelvis and chemotherapy. That was 40 years ago. And they believe I got a secondary cancer from the radiation as a child. So I was never able to have my own children physically. But a miracle came its way, and I found a doctor who was able to retrieve. I had three eggs, three embryos, and I have three babies, and we had a surrogate mom, so they're biologically mine.
Amazing.
So I, you know, thought I had everything I wanted, but there was just something that was like missing inside of me. That's why I say cancer saved my life, because I was really not really living the life that I truly wanted to live. I was still, I think, traumatized from my childhood cancer. So I never healed emotionally. That's why I say the big part of the emotional recovery is so important to cancer, because you can just put the Band-Aid on, you know, have the surgery, finish the chemo. But until you really deal with the trauma, the emotional, the long-term side effects, these things will catch up to you at some point in your life, which is what I believed happened to me during that time when I had my first cancer. So my story goes to like way back when I was a young little girl.
Yeah.
My shadow story. And my father committed suicide when I was actually in the hospital with cancer when I was little.
Wow.
So I created the story in my head that it was all my fault, that if I didn't have cancer, my dad would be alive. You know, so I didn't really realize the psychology of what our brain unconsciously does. So I formed the story that, you know, cancer to me was a bad thing. And that I was going to be bound to commit suicide, like my father and my grandfather, because, you know, when things get hard, you just give up. So that became my story. And so that's how I started feeling. You know, I was feeling sad. Sometimes I had suicidal thoughts, and I really wanted just to die because my life was so miserable. That's what the story was in my head. And then I was diagnosed with cancer. Ironically, I think I honestly manifested it. I had a lot of anger inside of me, just, you know, fear, worry, anxiety, just everything. Like, I wasn't internally happy, but on the external, the physical part, I looked like the picture of health. I looked healthy, I looked happy. But there was this secret inside of me that was like, I had shame around having cancer and all my scars and my body. I hated myself. So the truth is, when I got diagnosed with my second cancer, the stage 3C ovarian cancer, they told me that there was no cure for this, that I most likely wasn't going to survive, you know, beyond 3 years. And it's when I truly had my wake up call that if I'm going to die, I'm going to start living today. Right. And that's what I started doing. I started tackling life. I changed my mindset. I took on, I became a certified coach. And I really studied with the psychology of like the whole neural system of, you know, you can retrain your brain, you can change your thoughts, and anything with repetition and time can be changed. And that's when I started using my mind to help my body recover in the hospital, because no doctor told me how to recover. They didn't tell me to get up and, you know, do these exercises. It's what I knew how to do in my profession. So that's what I started doing. And that's kind of really my story was, cancer was my big wake up call. And I definitely look at life differently now. And I started loving myself and my body and respecting myself and just really pretty much just changed the whole internal dialogue to help my external dialogue. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I was thinking while you're talking, I mean, how many people would love to be able to make that change for themselves who have the kind of relationship, for whatever reason, that you describe to themselves, but just don't see a way out. And, you know, they, so often, somebody finds a hugely challenging situation like yours, of getting cancer, is actually a way out for them. But of course, somebody who else who's stuck in the same position, you can't just say, well, you need to have something really bad happen to you. I mean, that's obviously not the answer. Do you feel there's a way to help people to make that change without the crisis?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's what I teach. I have really, like, you know, the whole coaching aspect of, you know, just looking at, you know, I teach a program called New Life Story. So you don't have to have cancer. You know, I really truly want to help people prevent cancer by, you know, looking at their life and seeing where things are toxic. It could be toxic relationships, the way you treat your body mentally, right? The way you talk to yourself, what you feed yourself. So all these things can be, I believe, prevention to this big traumatic event, cancer, let's just say. So there are things that we can all do to prevent cancer. And I really believe that by sharing this and talking about this, that we can help a lot of people, because this is not talked about until, you know, it happens and it's too late.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And another thing that was in my mind while you were talking, it was about the suicide. You said your father's suicide, but you also said your grandparents. Was it your grandfather's suicide? It's almost like it's hereditary, isn't it? It's an extraordinary thing, is that possibility of suicide gets handed down from parent to child. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's like the story, right? That keeps, you know, it keeps the pattern that keeps going until you break it. Like, so it's like anything with people that have abusive parents, or, you know, you're in domestic violence. Like, so until you decide to change the story, which is what I did, you're going to keep repeating the story. So we all have the ability to change any story if we're willing to look deep in and do the work. And it's not always easy. No. You know, it was very hard for me. But once you face the truth and you can be honest and share your story with vulnerability and let go of judgment of what other people think of you, I realize that there's a lot of people out there that are suffering, that are afraid to share their story. because they feel alone. But the truth is that we all have a story to share, cancer or not, and mm-hmm. you are not alone.
Right. Absolutely. And on that score, just like to mention to you, out of interest, I can't help but bring it up, is that my own daughter had a rhabdomyosarcoma at age 9.
Oh, and wow.
That's the reason I'm doing what I'm doing now. And the experience around her having cancer was the thing that majorly changed my life as well. So extraordinary.
That's amazing, because I've never actually met another rhabdomyosarcoma child in where I live. They're all international. I actually help. I have a nonprofit and I help, mentor young girls with rhabdomyosarcoma, because there are long-term side effects from the radiation and scoliosis. There's things that's why I teach scoliosis now. It's my big passion. But there are things that, doctors don't tell us about because the research hasn't been there. So yeah, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's hugely rare, isn't it? And we certainly knew that at the time. And I don't think we've met other people face to face with the, the same.
Oh, wow, there's a reason why we're talking today then, right?
Well, absolutely, yeah. But extraordinary how these experiences, it was the whole experience wasn't something I'd wish on anybody else at all. But it's my life's completely changed by it.
Yeah, and I really truly think too that cancer doesn't just affect, the person with cancer, but like you just said, it affects the whole family, the caregivers, it affects everyone around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So this issue of relationship to self is such a central one. I'd like to talk it over a little bit more if I could. How widespread do you feel that a seriously poor relationship to self actually is?
I think it's really widespread.
And you focus on working with women, I believe, but do you believe it's the same amongst men?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I definitely mentor men too, but I just, I have a little a niche with online women, so they feel safe and that's why I do that. But absolutely, I have a lot of men that reach out to me and ask me why I don't work with men, but I do.
Okay.
And absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two, like men, I'm not gonna say it's harder, but I think that it's maybe more challenging for sometimes men to talk about their emotions. So, they hold them in. And I think there is a space that is needed, and I'm sure that's out there. I'm not a part of that space, but there are men that need support too, just like women. Women are very talkative,
Right.
And so I know that there are needs for men in this capacity also.
Yeah, well, I'm very aware of them. Working in this field for 15 years now, the whole arena of like complementary support, if you like, is largely by and for women, and that's not because the men don't need it. It's literally that I think the culturally ingrained to be independent and all the rest of it to such a degree that most men don't even think they need such a thing, even though of course it's exactly. They might be going through the hugest crisis of their life.
Correct. Right. I worked with at the mentor support group in my local town. There was actually mostly young men in their 20s, and they really just craved the support. And it was nice to see the young group that are more open and talkative.
Yeah.
But you get past, your 40s and your 50s. I've even seen it with women. They're like, well, I don't need support. I'm perfectly fine.
Right,
and I'm
right.
Like, wow, great for you, But, not everyone's fine, So it's nice just to always have someone to reach out to.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. It is, everything is loosening up, but I would love to see men creating resources for men in the same way that women do, because I think it's desperately needed myself.
Absolutely. I was just working with a man in my studio actually who has prostate cancer. And so of course my exercises that I teach in my program, and I'm very in tune with like the pelvic floor rehab, we'll just say. And this man was referred to me from a surgeon. And, you know, it's a kind of an embarrassing for a guy to talk about that, but he was very open, and we were working on Kegels and pelvic floor contractions, and he was so excited, and he was strengthening his core, and we made it fun. And he was just saying, like, why isn't there more people that talks about this or helps people? Because it's kind of an embarrassing place to talk about down there, you know?
Right.
And I was like, absolutely. Like, I have no fear around that. I think it's make it fun.
Right.
But he definitely grateful.
Well, I've got to say, it's really only five or a few more years since men felt comfortable to talk about having a prostate or even knew what it was or where it was. I think, you know, it's just that disconnected from the whole thing. So it's very healthy when people do start just talking about it in a very down-to-earth way.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So there's something I wanted to ask about a little bit from my own experiences that... you know, we're talking about relationship to self. And I know one of the things that you can go backwards and forwards with enormously when you're trying to find a way forward, if you like, is that there's more than one sort of self-confidence. There's the kind of healthy type that you're referring to, which is where you're in yourself. But there's also one that's sort of the flip side of lack of confidence, and that's arrogance. And a lot of people, I think, tussle with knowing the difference within themselves. I just wonder whether you could say anything about the differences between self-confidence and arrogance, and how you tell one from the other, and how to avoid pitfalls.
That's a good question. Let me see if I can answer that. It's funny because I often struggled with self-confidence myself. That's been one of my things I've been working with, in believing in myself, even being in a businesswoman, right? Like I'm right. Been doing this for years, and it's almost as if it's the same thing. What you're just saying is you don't want to be arrogant and say, well, I know this and I'm good at this, which I never say, because you don't want to sound arrogant. Right. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, I'm also doing myself a disservice because I'm not helping people that need the help. Right. So
right.
It's kind of like twofold for me. You know, self-confidence is not about being like, you know, when they talk about self-love and, oh, you're so selfish. People say, oh, you're selfish. Well, self-love is a big part of healing. And if you don't love yourself, you let yourself go. Right. Mm-hmm. And then you begin to lose yourself. And that's when I believe like the relationship with yourself is lost. And that's when resentment can come on, anger can come on, and that's right. When disease can come. So for me, I believe like learning how to have self-confidence is just learning to love yourself enough to believe in yourself that you're worth it. To me, that's self-confidence. Right. Arrogance, you're talking about like without being too arrogant. Is that what you mean? Like being...
Yeah, people who are actually deep down, they're actually not confident like everybody else, but they express it in terms of arrogance often.
But they're not confident.
No.
Yeah, I think it's like a cover up, right?
Yeah.
Like they're trying to be something not. So they actually have work to do inside too. So we all, you know, it's like a mere reflection of the way, you know, we treat other people, like, or to say we judge someone, right?
Yeah.
It's probably because we really have work to do on ourselves more than anything.
Right.
So I believe, you know, the arrogance that you're talking about is really like a reflection of what could you do inside your own self to look at yourself and be like, where's this arrogance coming from? It could be from, you know, from your past, from an old story, or it could be something that, you know, maybe they're really, this person who's looks arrogant is actually really hurting inside, but doesn't have anyone to talk to or is afraid. Yeah, that's a hard question to answer, but I hope I answered it.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I you know, I have this feeling like there's something about, you know, when you were describing yourself as having trouble with just saying what you're good at. And I think, yeah, lots of people struggle with that. And but there's a way that you can be a bit more factual about these things. It's often people reject the facts over and over and over again. You know, you can tell somebody you're a fantastic singer and they say, no, I'm rubbish. You know, and they will do anything to reject the fact that the world is reflecting back to them over and over again that they're really good at something. And it's being prepared to
That's
be a great, little bit more.
I have a hard time taking compliments.
Right.
And like, oh, you look so good. And I'm like, no, I don't. Like, and I'm like, I have at least scars on my stomach and they don't see them, right? Only
right.
I do.
Yeah.
So you all we see our own flaws. And that's for me, the big part of recovering from cancer and healing from cancer. And, you know, why I say cancer saved my life, because now I'm like, okay, like what if I look at this scar as like, wow, like I'm alive. Like I got a second chance and a third chance. And instead of looking at all the bad things that happened to me, what
right.
if we shifted it and focused on all the good things that happened and came from this?
Right, right. And, you know, I think very often too that our own view of ourselves can be far more suspect than other people's. So we think we know ourselves really well, but do we really?
No, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I just been in this year-long program of like a self-discovery and...
Yeah.
The past 5 years I've been on this journey and, you know, just learning to say no when, you know, I'm a people pleaser and I'm an overgiver because I feel like, you know, it comes from my old story, right? When I was a little girl with cancer, I felt different. And so I just wanted to be liked. And so I did anything for people to like me and to fit in, and I didn't want to be different. So,
right.
Yeah, it's just the whole journey of healing. And it's the other thing I want to mention too is I had a hard time with people saying to me, well, just get over it. Like, you're cancer free now. Like, what do you have to worry about? Like, people don't understand what
right.
comes with, you know, it's more than the physical body. It's like I said, it's the emotional trauma, the emotional, even if you don't think it's traumatic.
It is.
You know, it's.
It is.
Right.
And also I think, you know, that thing of once you've had cancer, then it's kind of there in your life and thinking it's all over and you just forget about it. Well, it doesn't really happen like that, does it?
Right. No. And there's always that fear of the what if it comes back again, right?
Yeah.
I actually never thought about that at all when I was a kid growing up. I had a great life after my recovery.
Sure.
You know, things were a little different, but I had a great 30-year span, you know, and then it wasn't that my ovarian cancer when they said there was no cure, and you hear that word no cure and curable, that's when you start to question everything
right.
and you start questioning like your purpose in life. Why am I here? You know, what have I done? For me, it was like my big wake up call. I didn't want to die and leave my kids with, you know, their mom who didn't create anything or it wasn't inspiring. And she was a sad, depressed person that just cried all the time. Right.
Right.
So that's really when I changed my story was when I went to an end of life therapy appointment and the guy said, you know, you don't have to have this surgery. You can just live your next 6 months with your kids and enjoy it. And, you know, I was ready to give up at that point. I just thought, you know, I can't do this anymore. This is too hard. I'm emotionally just, I hit rock bottom.
Right.
Like, I mean, I was rock bottom and it would have been easier just to give up and die.
Right.
And then there was a moment where the light turned on and it was like, what are you doing? Like, no, I'm not ready to die. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to end without a fight. And my surgeon said to me, you know, if anyone can do this, Emily, it's you. You're young, you're motivated, you're a professional teacher, you teach this stuff.
Yeah.
And here I was struggling with my own mindset, right? And I'm teaching this work.
Right.
Right?
But there's the outside view, There's somebody to listen to.
Right. And then I'm feeling like a failure. Like if I can't even help myself, like how could someone who doesn't even know this stuff help themselves, right? It's hard.
Right.
But you can it. You just have to recognize the thoughts, the negative thoughts, the limiting beliefs that come in. And you just have, you can learn to stop them. You can, you know, it's like the broken record.
Right.
And it's hearing that record, and then, you know, one of my coaches would say, just hang the phone up. Like when you hear that voice,
yeah,
voices in your head, stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Well, yeah, I mean, you've clearly done exactly that and turned it around. So kudos to you. That's something, of course, not everybody does achieve it, but you've clearly done it. Very interesting to hear you describing the difference between when you were young and your view of cancer and when you were older. My own daughter, she was filmed when she was 23. She actually died at the age of 23, and it was not long before she died she was filmed. We didn't know that, of course, at the time, but she spoke about this thing, about how much harder it was to have cancer as a young adult than it was when she was a child. And, you know, that one of the benefits of being a child, if you like, is that you don't really concern yourself with the future that much. You know, you're not thinking about what's going to happen and how much worse it's going to get or anything else. You're actually, well, I feel all right today, so it's all right. You know, you're much more genuinely in the moment, if you like. But as an adult, you have responsibilities, you have this future you planned out, you have your children, all these things going on, as well as your ideas about cancer and whether you're going to survive or not. It's an extraordinary complex situation compared with the child's one.
Absolutely. I mean, you just look at I have three kids, and I look at them, and kids, they just, you know, they move on. They get like, mom, get over it, you know, get over it, move on. Like, whereas we like obsess over things, you know, like,
yeah.
And you know, they're over it a long time ago. And yeah, I think kids are just out playing, they're having fun. And
yeah.
Like I didn't even think about it growing up. I mean, I knew I was a little bit different, and I was the only kid that had cancer, and I had a scar, and I would hide at the bathrooms when I changed, so I didn't want to be seen. But I didn't have that emotional, for me, it was more of a loss of my father that it was like hard for me, like, you know, like the guilt.
Yeah, sure.
And why am I not good enough? Yeah. Did your daughter have a reoccurrence or a secondary cancer?
Yeah, she had. So they were caused by radiation. She had cancer twice again. She had cancer three times in all, and the second two were radiation-induced osteosarcoma. So, that's what happens.
That's what I help educate people with. 90%, you know, right now it's actually Childhood Awareness Month also, as long with ovarian cancers, that, you know, 90% of children, well, this is what I think I've read or heard, that they get a secondary cancer from radiation, which happened to me too. And just like your daughter, and you know, there needs to be a lot more research put into childhood cancer. I've been in a study with St. Jude's Hospital since I was four.
Have you?
And I believe that the treatments are exactly the same. They haven't changed, even the surgeries.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing. We think of all this billions poured into cancer and everything. But of course, in the case of rhabdomyosarcoma, it's so rare. Of course, there's not that much specific research going into that. But nonetheless, progress is slow. I mean, you know, they're still using chemotherapy agents that are 30, 40, 50 years old. So, despite the cutting edge sort of hype and everything else that comes out in the papers, an awful lot of people are getting some very old stuff.
Yeah.
So look, I just wanted to mention two things to do with the sort of psychological side. Either of these could be great big topics. I think we're going to have to pass over them reasonably quickly. But I just wanted to come back to something you briefly mentioned. You talked about boundaries this was in relation to yourself, but it's something you talk about a lot on your website. You're obviously concerned about this. Why do you think it's so important for people with cancer?
Well, I believe because once you get cancer, I'll just give you a quick example. I mean, it could go anywhere from, you know, people coming over to your house when you're trying to heal. And I remember people knocking on my door all the time, and you know, they wanted to talk and hear the story. And I remember feeling exhausted. Like, I mean, I didn't know how to set a boundary back then. And really, boundary is about taking care of yourself. Like, going back to, you know, what's most important is surviving right now and taking care of yourself.
Right.
So you have boundaries around, you know, your caregiver or your friends, or just taking care of your own health, you know. So boundaries around what you need to do for yourself and honor yourself physically and emotionally so that you can survive. So I thought of it as like, okay, you know, where am I crossing my boundaries today? Did I have a healthy breakfast? No. Okay. Well, that's crossing a boundary because that's not okay. Healthy. Right?
Right.
How about my exercise? Did I get out and walk and do my exercise? No. Okay. I crossed my boundary again. So you look at like areas where you're crossing your boundaries, and when you're crossing your boundaries, it's, you're doing yourself a disservice. That's not self-love. That's not self-care. So for a big part of what I teach is, you know, boundaries for self-love. And like you said, building confidence and learning to say no to things when you're always been a people pleaser in order to honor your health and take care of yourself. So for me, the boundaries really comes around what's good for me. Because I'm someone who can overgive and exhaust myself physically, mentally, especially in my job, what I do.
Okay.
And then I have to remember, like, I'm a survivor too. Like, I have to take care of myself. So it's really important that I have my own boundaries around my work schedule, around, you know, my children. And so I know everyone needs boundaries. And this is something I didn't know and learn. And I wish I would have known at a younger age, because it would have helped me a lot in relationships also, and business, everywhere.
Interesting.
So it's like people say they want to be, you know, healthy. Let's say I have diabetes and now I have cancer.
Right.
Okay. So it's cause and effect, right? So
yep.
You say you want to be healthy, but yet you're not doing anything to take the action steps to lose the weight or be healthy. So, you know, you could start basic with some basic boundaries of where do you cross your boundaries? Well, I overeat, or I do this, or I don't exercise. So that's kind of where boundaries come in for me. Does that make sense?
It does. It's interesting. So you're talking about yourself. You're crossing your own boundaries of what's good for you, which is very interesting.
Exactly.
People.
I've learned two different forms of boundaries.
Okay.
And before I got my divorce, it was boundaries. Like, tell that person, like, when you do that, don't do that to me. You know.
Yeah.
I will. And then this most recent is about self boundaries. So about you. So you only can allow someone to hurt your feelings if you allow them to, right? So nobody can trigger you or hurt your feelings unless you allow it. So that's where we have to learn self boundaries, like our little container, because really we can only control ourselves, right?
Right.
So just like cancer, you can really get overwhelmed with cancer. It can be just overwhelming. You know, we can't really control cancer, but we can control is what we do to help cancer or to prevent cancer.
Right.
So again, it comes back to your own self boundaries as to what you can do to control the situation, not other, because boundaries really come back to you and you. It's all about you and you.
Yeah. Interesting. This is an area, I think, for a lot of people where there's a similar confusion to the one we were talking about earlier, where you're talking about somebody being confident or being arrogant and not being able to tell one from the other. And I think this can seem selfish to people, you know, looking after themselves in this kind of way, and that they should be looking after other people first and foremost. And, you know, as you point out, it's a mistake in the end, because it's, you know, yeah, where are we if we don't look after ourselves?
Well, exactly, right? You got to put your own oxygen mask on first, because in the end, even being like a mom and a wife, and, you know, we're taking care of everyone else, but really what happened here is, I'm the perfect example, is you let yourself go because you're so, you know, I was a mom and I had all the signs and symptoms of cancer, but I ignored them because I didn't have time to go to the doctor because I was taking care of my kids. And, you know, I was complaining too much. And so I stopped complaining because that's what, you know, someone told me. So here I was feeling selfish for saying what I needed.
Yeah.
I needed, you know, I need this. I need attention. I need you to listen to me. And I wasn't heard. And that, to me, that was frustrating.
Yeah.
And that's when I became resentful. And that's when I truly believe the cancer started forming inside of me, because I hid it, all my emotions in, because, you know, I was selfish if I wanted to say what I felt, you know?
Right.
And so
exactly.
What I did, I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when you cross your boundaries of saying what you need. It comes out somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was cancer.
Right. Well, great. I really like the way you're describing it in this way of actually crossing your own boundaries, because it's your own deal then, the whole thing. That's really good.
Yeah. it's your own view.
Yeah. So look, not much time left. I just hope you can tell us, summarize your programs, what they are, who's eligible to join them.
Okay, great. So I have a couple of different programs. So one program, which we were just talking about, is the Boundary Program. So mm-hmm. it's for anyone, really, men or women. And it's about learning how to, it's a 10-step process. So we go through a three-month journey together, and we really peel back the onion, right? The layers and layers, and go ahead and excavate on a journey.
Right.
Really about like what you've kind of hidden in your past, right? Let's just say, and uncovering maybe old stories that we tell ourselves, and learning how to set boundaries, where we're codependent, how we can move forward, and really envisioning your empowered life of what you want your life to look like, because mm-hmm. it's all possible. So that's for anyone. And then I have, a program called Reclaim Your Strength and Hope, which is a program, physical program recovery for anyone who's been diagnosed with cancer, especially ovarian cancer or any abdominal cancers. It's all built around recovery from the hospital.
Right.
So it's like a proven roadmap for safely rehabilitating your body after cancer surgery.
Brilliant.
This program is endorsed by 3 or 4 surgeons. Mm-hmm. And it's step-by-step process. There's 5 modules, and I'm with you every step of the way. I bring in a women's health physical therapist in there. We talk a lot about, you know, pelvic floor health and all the muscles of the anatomy of the internal organs and the diaphragms and breathing and why it's all important and why it's important to do it with a professional and not just go back and jump out into your regular workout right away after surgery, because you can get a hernia or something else.
Okay, so, yeah.
And actually, you know, post-surgery, we get, you know, osteoporosis, osteopenia. There's other things that come along with it. So we have to be very cautious of how we move our body in a safe way. So this program's for anyone who has any kind of injury or surgery, ostomy, colon bag, any kind of thing where they have fear around exercise and movement and they want help.
Right.
Then I have an online support group for mm-hmm. cancer survivors. This one's just for women.
Mm-hmm.
We meet every Sunday. And it's awesome. It's just this international group of women that talk. Mm. And then my last one that I do is called New Life Story Coaching. It's another 3-month program where I really take anyone. This is pre-cancer, so that you, like, let's just say it could be for anyone, but for me, I started this program myself personally. This is what transformed my life. Was I wanted it. I woke up one day and I was like, I want a new life. Now I have cancer. I'm divorced. And I had to really dig deep inside of me and see what I needed to change. So this one's about recognizing what you want to change in your life mm-hmm. and how you progress and move forward.
Right. Fantastic. And what's the format of these programs? How do they run?
The format of the all the private coaching ones are private coaching.
Yeah.
The group Reclaim Your Light, Reclaim Your Strength and Hope is it's all by Zoom, so we get to see each other.
Okay.
And the online recovery for cancer recovery is all pre-recorded exercises, and it's all, there's over 100 videos, and that's all online, self-guided, self-paced, so it's easy to follow.
I see. And how many in your international group?
I have, well, it's hard to say because they don't all come on at the same time.
Sure.
But I have right now in my small group, there's about 20 of them that are currently coming on.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people on it that, you know, they get the emails and the support groups and so once they join the program, they get a 6-week guided, it's called Reclaim Your Light. And it's like an introductory to kind of looking at, you know, where areas in your life, like forgiveness. So just really quickly, forgiveness was a big part of my journey of healing. Right. There's a lot of emotions that come with cancer.
Mm.
So who do you need to forgive in your life? Could be yourself, could be someone else. You know, and just looking at like areas of your life that you want to change.
Right. Okay, great.
I have so much to give and so much to share. So I hope I made it kind of broke it down a little bit there for you.
That's very good. Do you want to just give us a mention about your book?
Yeah, so my book is, you can find on Amazon. It's called Reclaim Your Strength and Hope, and it's exercises for core recovery. And the foreword is from Chris Carr, the New York Times bestselling author, who also has her own cancer journey. And she's an amazing person who inspired me kind of to take this path myself. And it's a proven roadmap for safely rehabilitating your body after cancer surgery. And I'm a big believer that movement is medicine. So this is a holistic and full spectrum guide, really guided for women in cancer recovery, which incorporates self, gentle, and therapeutic Pilates and yoga exercises.
Brilliant.
And it has, you know, personal stories in there about my energy healer, who I used, my shaman. And I will end on this note where my energy healer, who I went and saw, I would do anything to, you know, cure my cancer at that time. And the most interesting thing that he said to me, which is what led me on this path of healing myself internally, emotionally, he touched my body with his hands and I was totally skeptical. I've never seen an energy healer. I didn't know what to expect. He literally touched my body and said, my body was really hot on my abdomen where my stomach was and my cancer was. He said, you're probably going to die of anger before you die of cancer. And I was like, whoa. That to me was like, that's why I started the whole journey, the self journey of healing, like, you know, letting go of the past. And to me, that's really what I believe has cured me. That's, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's for me, I was dying inside already before cancer.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I'm actually living for the first time in my life.
Fantastic. What a great story. Okay, so I just want to mention, I'm delighted that you're contributing to the wellness area of our upcoming 2-week spectacular online event, Your Life and Cancer 2020. That's at yourlifeandcancer.com. Just to explain to everybody, the wellness area comprises on-demand sessions that are there for participants to sample any time, such as during the many breaks there are. So this will be an opportunity for today's listeners to see you in action on video. So thanks so much for joining us today, Emily. I've loved meeting you online and hearing your extraordinary story is incredibly inspiring.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, if you're in need of some inspiration when you listened in today, I hope that hit the spot. As I mentioned, Emily is contributing to our Your Life and Cancer online event in the wellness area. So, in addition to the more than 40 experts taking part in the discussions, there'll be a range of brilliant practitioners contributing to the on-demand sessions in the wellness area. This is an incredible additional opportunity to sample an approach for the first time, or simply to benefit from a tried and trusted method. If you haven't already looked, do visit yourlifeandcancer.com. Check out the speakers page from which you can see how they will be involved in the program. And of course, be sure to take advantage of the early bird prices while you can. Thanks so much for listening today. I'll be back next week with another Yes Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.